Well, hey everyone, Srikar here.
And I'm Sneha. Hope the sun rays have blessed you with vitamin D today. And I hope all of y'all are safe. So get energized and plug into this episode where we talk about a couple of Greek astronomers and how constellations got their names. That is, they got most of their freaky names. And we're gonna talk about all of them. Also, a spoiler, some of them sure have funny ones.
So buckle up and let's start the third episode of Deep Into Cosmos. So yeah, speaking about sun and moon, we also have a great astronomer who made huge contribution to the solar and lunar orbits and their distance from the Earth.
Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, so he is?
Wait, we're gonna shout his name at the same time, and I guess our audience might be a little disturbed with both of our sounds. So why don't you go ahead and say it, Srikar?
Yeah, fine. Hipparchus of Nicaea. He was a great astronomer who worked on lunar and solar orbits and predicted the distance of sun and moon from the Earth. He's also considered to be the founder of trigonometry. He's known to have been a working astronomer at least from 162 to 127 BC. With his solar and lunar theories and his trigonometry, he may have been the first to develop a reliable method to predict solar eclipses. His other achievements include discovery and measurements of Earth's precession, the compilation of the first comprehensive star catalog of the Western world, which is a huge deal, and also the invention of astrolabe and armillary sphere, which he used during the creation of the star catalog.
Whoa, wait, things are getting a little complicated. So what's an astrolabe? And what's an armillary sphere?
Yeah, so armillary sphere is nothing complicated, to be frank. It's just a model which consists of objects visible to us in the sky, like the sun, moon, and also a few constellations. Whereas astrolabe is an astronomical device that depicts a handheld model of the universe, just like a globe, kind of. Basically, we can calculate the local time and also identify stars and planets. It is generally used by astronomers. But these days, these are hardly used as the technology has gradually made all these calculations much simpler.
Well, I bet most of the calculations can be done by Google, but I really never knew what an astrolabe was. Well, Hipparchus was one hell of an astronomer who found out this new theory. But have you ever heard of Eratosthenes? I know his name is pretty hard to pronounce, but I want y'all to say it with me. So, Eratosthenes. So I guess it has like five syllables, but did you get it? I hope you did. Well, about Eratosthenes, he lived in Alexandria. Remember in our previous episode, we talked about the Library of Alexandria, and Eratosthenes, he lived in Alexandria and was mostly considered as a beta instead of an alpha. But to me, he was an alpha at everything. Eratosthenes was a phenomenal Greek astronomer. He was an astronomer, historian, geographer, philosopher, a poet, a theater critic, and a mathematician. He also wrote a ton of books, from the depths of astronomy, till freedom, and till pain and sorrow. He was the director of the Great Library of Alexandria. So, about Eratosthenes, he found out the circumference of the Earth by just the mere applications of basic mathematics, a few sticks, the sun's shadow, and the position of the sun. So, let me tell you about his story and how he found the circumference of the Earth. One day, Eratosthenes found out in a papyrus scroll in the Library of Alexandria about a summer solstice, which was on June 21st. So what is a summer solstice? So a summer solstice is nothing but the longest day of the year. And this day was on June 21st. The sun's reflection could be seen from a well in which the sun was right above the well. So Eratosthenes took this opportunity To predict something new, Eratosthenes thought of an idea where he would first place a stick upright at Cyrene and another stick at Alexandria, where he resided. So during noon, the sun rays were right above Cyrene and depicted no presence of shadows casted by the temple columns or any object. So he wanted to know whether this was true in Alexandria as well, whether there was no shadow of the stick which was at Alexandria. So as the sun rays were upright to both the regions, why was their shadow casted at Alexandria and not at Cyrene? Well, that was technically because the earth is round. Yes, he said it, the earth is round and it's not flat. All of you flat earthers out there, you're wrong. Let me elaborate about that. If both the sticks didn't have a shadow, then we would obviously think that the earth is a flat earth. But through Eratosthenes' observation, he found out that if one stick had a shadow and another stick didn't have a shadow, then we could predict that earth was a sphere or a globe. But how did he find the circumference? Well, there's more to this. So since the sun was right above the stick in Cyrene, there was an angle that was formed by the shadow of the stick in Alexandria, right? So if the extent of these lines, if we extend these lines towards the center of the earth, Eratosthenes found out that the angle was 7 degrees. So from the shadow length in Alexandria, the angle A can be measured from simple geometry. So let's talk about some math, people. So if two parallel lines are transected by a third line, the alternate interior angles are equal. So angle B equals to angle A, where angle A is the degree of the shadow in Alexandria and angle B is the degree of the shadow in Cyrene. So by measuring the shadow length in Alexandria, Eratosthenes concluded that Cyrene was 7 degrees. So angle A is equal to angle B, which is equal to 7 degrees, in which this 7 degrees from Cyrene was 7 degrees away from the circumference of the earth. Here we can say that Cyrene was 7 degrees away from the circumference of the earth, in which this 7 degrees was 1/50th of the total 360 degrees, in which this 360 degrees was the full circumference of the earth. Back then, Eratosthenes appointed a man to calculate the distance between Cyrene and Alexandria, barefoot. Yep, you heard that right, barefoot. I know it sounds kind of shocking, but I feel really bad for the man who walked that much. But you want to know the distance between Cyrene and Alexandria? It was 800 kilometers. So that man walked 800 kilometers. So if we multiply this 800 kilometers into 50, what do we get? But how do we get this 50? So remember the 7 degrees that we obtained, the angle of Cyrene and Alexandria? So let's calculate that. We're gonna cross multiply. So first, on the left hand side, we're gonna take 7 degrees by 360 degrees. So what does that give us? So 7 degrees out of 360 degrees is nothing but 1/50th of the 360 degrees. So this 7 degrees that we obtained is 1/50th of 360 degrees. So next we're gonna talk about the right hand side. So on the right hand side, we're gonna take 800 kilometers, which was the distance between Cyrene and Alexandria. This, we're gonna take 800 kilometers by x kilometers. So this x is nothing but the circumference of the earth that we have to find. So we're gonna represent it as 1 by 50 is equal to 800 by x. So if you cross multiply, what do you get? 800 into 50, which is x kilometers. So how much does that give us? 40,000 kilometers. So x is equal to 40,000 kilometers. And what is this value? This value is the circumference of the earth. And back then, this answer was actually right, but it was only off by a few numerals. The only tools that he used were his eyes, his feet, his brains, and sticks, and his taste for the experiment. So this was one of the most remarkable achievements for 2,200 years ago. He was the first person to accurately measure the size of the planet. And this story always blows my mind.
So now, imagine this. It's a clear night sky, and you sit out on the terrace and relax back. When you see the sky, You find lots of twinkling stars that seem to extend all over the sky. You find a group of stars like a hunter, and another like a scorpion, and so on. You remember knowing those from your science book, but what are they exactly? Yeah, you're right, they're constellations.
Constellations. So what is a constellation? So, a constellation is a cosmic area where a group of stars are present. So, usually, these objects are depicted in a manner similar to the mythological figure or object. So, the very first known constellations are believed to have originated from prehistory. So, they were used by people to connect with their cultures. The Western constellations are Greek and are given in the works of Eratus and Ptolemy. They were added during the 15th century when European explorers ventured into the southern hemisphere. The 12 ancient constellations are linked to the zodiac. Well, I can say that most of these shapes of the constellations are pretty weird. And when you come to think of it, everyone's perspective is different, or they might be distinct from one another. So maybe it was different for the ancient Greeks too, since all of what they knew during their timeline were animal, plants, and a few other papyrus scripts. But they didn't have any technology. So since we have a lot of technology, and if we were to name the constellations now, we would have given them a bunch of bogus names, such as Game Boy. So that constellation looks like a Game Boy, that looks like a PS3, that looks like a music note, and that looks like an iPhone, or maybe the symbol of Apple, or maybe Instagram. Wouldn't that be weirder? I guess it would.
There are 88 officially recognized constellations in the sky, and these astronomical patterns have been fascinating and have a long history. Some star names are simply logical, like take Polaris for instance. It was named after its position in the North Pole. Sometimes logical names don't have to be boring, like Orion, which also boasts the brilliant Betelgeuse, which delightfully translates as the armpits of Orion. It's a very funny name, of course. I mean, the reference is pretty funny. Also, a few stars are big enough deals to have names unrelated to their constellations. For example, there is Sirius, in which there's a constellation named Canis Major, which translates to Big Dog. But it's Sirius actually means scorching rather than the more prosaic dog collar, which is a pretty funny deal, right? Like, the name of the star and the meaning of the constellation are completely different and unrelated. And then again, you have another differently named star, which is Algol. Algol generally means the head of a demon. It is in the constellation Perseus. So, Perseus is the hero of the Greek myth who decapitated Medusa. As you know, Medusa, she has snakes on her head, and when you swing into those snakes or on her face, you'll turn into stone. This was a myth where we all saw it in the cartoons, and also we read in the stories. So it's reasonable for him to be toting her head around the sky. And the real fun part is that the star name reflects this, Algol, which means head of the demon, referring to the head of Medusa. It's safe to look, thankfully, it's not like we will turn stone watching it. And then the translation has passed into English as a colloquial name for Algol. The demon star has bloody reputation in multiple cultures in multiple ways.
Some of these names fit thematically with their constellation, but result in somewhat humorous mental images. So there are a numerous amount of funny names for these stars, which are present in this constellation. But here, we can't cover everything in our episode, so do check out our Instagram for some more of them. So hundreds of the brightest stars, those visible with the unaided eye, were given names in ancient times. So these include Eltanen of Draco, the Dragon, and Vega in Lyra, the Lyre, observed by different cultures. So today's stars are named by their coordinates on the celestial sphere. This is an imaginary sphere surrounding Earth. Earth's north and south poles can be extended in space to this sphere, making the north and south celestial poles the poles around which the sphere spins. Polaris marks the intersection of the extended north pole and the sphere. Earth's equator, extended into space, intersects this sphere of the celestial equator, dividing it into northern and southern hemispheres.
Modern constellations like the Peacock, Telescope, and Giraffe were identified later by many astronomers who used telescopes around 1500s, 1600s, and 1700s or so, who were able to observe the night sky in the southern part of the hemisphere. These scientists connected the dimmer stars between the ancient constellations. There are 38 modern constellations altogether.
So, as you can tell from these few examples, there's a rich amount of history behind a lot of the star names that we know of today. And so you know, it is fun in learning these star and constellation names in our night sky. Though you can use an app in order to locate most of these stars and know the names of the constellations and their respective stars.
So, thank you all for joining our podcast. See you all next week. Do give us a follow on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Also, do check our YouTube channel for interesting videos on space and many other topics.
We hope to have twinkled you out with our little star of an episode. So in our next episode, we'll be talking about the solar system, not as you know it, but in a more depth way, because you know we always go deep into cosmos. The links are in the description below, so peace out, everyone!